Nothing that we love is a one day key. And if we gon' do it, we gon' do this now. And if we say we gonna, we gon' hold this down.
How's it going, guys? My name is Will Holdren. I'm the host of the Will of Power podcast. And today we have a very special guest. And his name is Colvay. And Colvay is an inspirational engineer at Colvay LLC. And he is also a TEDx speaker. So, Colvay, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here. I'm really grateful that we get this time together and be able to provide some value for everybody.
Absolutely. And to start off, I have to ask my guest the same question. So what motivates you to get out of bed every day to do what you do?
What motivates me is the mission of that we serve. My goal is to help others be inspired to walk in purpose. I have a large number of people I want to reach, inspire them to, go after whatever it is that's on their heart. And, that's really what pushes me and motivates me.
Awesome. And you're at a pretty good spot right now in your life. I mean, you were a TEDx speaker. You're known as an inspirational engineer all over LinkedIn and stuff like that. And so before you reached this level of success, I'm just wondering, like, what was your come up like and how did you get to where you are right now?
Yeah, it was interesting because with a lot of success stories, usually there's a lot of failure on the front end and then they reach success on the back end, right? And so for me, when I was in high school, I know that you're in high school. And when I was in high school, I was locally famous. So this is pre-MySpace. There wasn't no such thing as social media and all these things. And my father would give me these, what I call hero speeches. And, when I'm in sixth grade, he's like, son, you can do anything you want to do, be anything you want to be. And I was like, Dad, I want to be a musician. Like, that's what I'm going to do. And my dad was like, nah, you can't do that. And I was like, really? Like, okay, like, I'm going to prove you wrong. So like when I was 18, we sold out a concert of 1,209 people. So I was locally famous in Indiana. And that was like a huge win. So with success earlier on, when you're not ready for it, it also creates a lot of ego. It doesn't necessarily build up all the right qualities. So evolving into the person that I am today, I work for a lot of companies studying success and reverse engineering success psychology for companies like Google, University of Phoenix, all these different companies. While I was at University of Phoenix, I helped a lady named Melissa Briscoe get her associate's degree. And next to that concert that we sold out, that was like one of the biggest wins I ever had, which is where my, I think, inspiration and passion to become a coach came from. And, from there, I helped my first student get six figures in revenue at Zillow. And I've just been on this kind of never ending track to help other people with their goals and their dreams.
Wow. I got to say, that's impressive, being in high school and selling out a concert of 1,200 people. And like back then, like how did you get 1,200 people just to come up to your concert, like since you were in high school and stuff like that? Like, how did you get your name out there?
Well, it was interesting because I had this single called Bobby Head. And I remember, working with my mentor in the studio and things like that. We thought the music was dope. Like, we thought it was really exciting, but I had never shared it with anybody. And I'm a freshman in high school. And we're at this campfire. Campfires was a big thing back then. And so I shared the single, like, right then and there with about 20 kids. And I was like, check out the song. Like, I love this. Like, I hope you guys love it. Tell me what you think. And I don't know, to this day, I don't know if it was because nobody in my city was doing music or if people were really excited about the song or because I was popular for basketball and other things. But it pretty much took off like wildfire. And, I kept sharing people the music. It was very simple. And so as word got around in this little city of about 16 to 25,000 people, people started knowing me for music. And I was always pressing up CDs and getting them out there. And so I guess it kind of went viral before social media existed.
Yeah, that's awesome. And you said you had a mentor to help you with like your music and stuff. And how did you find a mentor that was willing to help you and stuff?
So nowadays, as far as finding mentors go now, you want to be able to offer something of value in exchange for their time, right? So you want to do some research on that mentor. You want to be able to offer something to that person to where there's a win-win for everybody. If you're in America also provides there's a nonprofit called SCORE, like SCORE Basket, so score.org. You can get free mentorship from retired CEOs, CFOs, you know, you name it, whoever you need. You can get retired mentors from there. And I started there. My very first mentor was actually a family member of mine. So he was one of those guys who we hear about that writes a famous song, and then a celebrity pretty much steals the song, and you never hear about the originator. So for, you know, whatever reason, my family, my mother specifically, she wanted to go meet these long distance cousins. And, you know, I'm young or whatever. And he takes me in his room, which is where his home studio is. And we're hitting pads and having fun and making beats. And there you go. It was done and done. I just wanted to be around him all the time just so I could learn. And he allowed me to do that.
Man, that's awesome. I think, you know, a lot of people today, like for mentors, they want to get the best of the best people, which is great. But like you said, like even family members can mentor you on stuff, because they might not be the best of the best and be as popular as other people, but they still know what they're talking about, and they can still give you that good start. You know what I mean? To like actually get started with whatever you want to do. And as you can see, that's what you did in your life, and it actually helped you out and sold out your first concerts. So that's impressive.
Well, I say that it depends, right? I tell people, you know, you can't expect to get a six pack of abs from somebody that's overweight and obese, right? Yeah. If they've never done it before, it's not likely they can teach you to do that. So you want to make sure, if you are going to family and friends and, you know, people that are close to you starting out for mentors, you want to make sure that they have some kind of credibility in the field in which you want to go in, because there's a lot of people that have opinions and thoughts and ideas, and they have no experience. So you just want to make sure that you validate that mentor's experience some way, somehow.
Yeah. And so you said you were like a big hit in high school and stuff with music. Do you still make music today at all?
I do. So we make Motivation Music now, which is a brand in stealth. We got our first single out called Give It Time. It's in about 200 stores worldwide. If you type in like Cave and then Give It Time, you'll be able to check it out. We've got a lot of music coming out this year, so we're really excited about that.
Awesome. And I know you went to college for a little bit, and did you continue your music journey throughout college?
So when we went to, when we did the concert for high school, we didn't get any money for it. The school made about like 10 grand. I did it for my government class. Back then, and still to this day, actually, like your Master P, your 50 Cent came out that year, Lil Wayne, all these guys, they were selling drugs for capital. And then they put that capital into their music career. I didn't want to do that. So for me, it was like the concerts was either, you know, make or break. And so for that first concert, being that it did so well, and it was 45 minutes away from my, where I went to college was 45 minutes away from my hometown, I was like, I'm going to do it again. I'm going to do it bigger and better. And the show was bigger. The show was better. We got more PR. This time we took it to a 3,300 capacity venue at Ball State University. We actually sold 333 tickets out of 3,300, which is still really, really good for like, you know, like here in Austin where I'm at. Off record, you asked me where I'm based. And so here in Austin, like 333 tickets is like phenomenal in a lot of these venues here. However, In an auditorium of 3,300, it was like crickets. And so, you know, going to class, every time I would go to class, people would ask me like how the show was, how it went. And I was just so bitter and enraged. And so I dropped out of college the week after, just because I couldn't handle all that stress and pressure. So that was the end of my college journey from there.
Wow. And so, yeah, like you said, that concert didn't really live up to its full potential like you hoped. And why do you think like the concert didn't do as well as you thought it was going to?
I think now, you know, looking back, that was when Dave Chappelle was at his peak. And so Dave Chappelle charged $22 a ticket when he was at the peak of his career with the Chappelle Show. And I was charging $16 a ticket. So when I look back at it, there's a few big lessons I learned. You know, A, you want to build a little bit more organically sometimes. I think if I would charge like $3 a ticket, here I am, a college student, you know, with other college students that see me on an eye-to-eye level, I think the show would have done a lot better. Additionally, I was relying on certain organizations to carry through and do what their, you know, their part was. And I think that that's always a setup for failure. When you're relying on other people to execute and it's not on you, then people, you'll find that people will not always come through. That's just the reality of the matter. So I think you want to set up, you know, regular check-ins to make sure that people are doing their work, make sure that people are doing what they say they're going to do. But if you're relying on them, you're set up for failure. So those are two primary things that I would definitely change if I was to do it again.
Yeah. And you also said about how you want to build up like your own organic, like basically people around you that'll support you organically and stuff like that. And I've talked to a bunch of people and they also said that, especially like people that want to publish a book, like these publishing companies want you to have like 500,000 followers on Instagram and stuff like that. But like for so many people, that's really not realistic. So like for people that want to build a better organic following and stuff like that, like what would you recommend for them to do? Because in order to get to like 500,000 followers, like that's going to take so long unless you have like a major company just sponsoring you and stuff like that. So what would you recommend?
I would focus on 1,000 first and foremost. 1,000 people is achievable, right? And so 1,000 people, there's a great book by Pat Flynn called Will It Fly, which is all about, you know, how to build an MVP, which is a minimum viable product, how to generate that first round of buzz. And so before you can have 1,000, you got to have 10, right? Before you have 100, you get that first 10. Then you work to get that next 100. Then you work to get 225. Then you work to get 500. So what I would say is, first off, you want to get enough people that are excited about what you're doing to validate what you're doing that are not friends and family. Sometimes your friends and family will be yes men and yes women, which they just want to support you and love on you. So they just like, yeah, that's cool, right? But when you're working with strangers and we work with people who don't have an emotional attachment to what you're doing, those are the people that really tell you, you know, the ins and outs of what you got, whether it's good or whether it's bad, whether it's a product, whether it's a service. And you need those people. From there, you can get, you know, 1 to 3 referrals per person. Right. So you want to continuously do what I call testimonial stacking with your product or with your service, which is where you're going to get a review when you do that check in to see how things are going or see how they like it, assuming they do like what you offer. Then at that moment, you want to get a testimonial from them when they're at the peak of their excitement and continue to do that over and over again, sharing those testimonials, sharing those wins with the world and letting more people know about what you're doing. In addition to right now, we're in the we're in the social media age. It's not like when I started music. So becoming a master, like Will, I see you on LinkedIn posting all the time, right? Engaging with people all the time. Right. And you've got to constantly do that on the platform of your choosing or platforms of your choosing. And I would tell somebody, you know, master one platform, the ins and outs, build a community, always reach out and connect with people. Share what you're doing, but focus on them first. And those are just a few things that you can do to start really building your audience and to leverage that audience.
Yeah. And from my experience, like my Instagram probably has about 960 followers, somewhere around there. But my LinkedIn so far is at to like 1,500 followers, I think. And I've been posting for about 3 months compared to my Instagram, which has been going on for like years now. So for me, I mean, LinkedIn is just so much better to actually grow a brand. It feels so much more rewarding when you see those posts that get like 8,000 views from people. Like, wow, I didn't even know that was possible. Now 8,000 people are seeing my content and stuff. So, I mean, for me, the best way to grow organically is definitely with using LinkedIn. Like Instagram, the algorithm really isn't there to support you. And because like I said, I still have 960 followers, but like only 400 people will see my post or something like that. And it kind of gets disheartening, especially when you see like these gurus out there that have millions of followers, 500,000 followers. And then, you know, you look at their posts and they have like 1,000 likes. So, I mean,
absolutely. It's a different engine. You know, from what I've been told, our team hasn't spent a lot of time on TikTok as much as we would like. But from what we've been told, you know, TikTok is also very organic right now, like LinkedIn. And so the algorithm is more favorable to the user. And so you definitely want to take advantage of the platform while you can, for sure. Just know that there's always going to be another platform, right? Like Vine was how Cameron Dallas got popular. And I can't even think of the guitar player right now. His name is Shawn Mendes. So, you know, just know that it's not the platform, It's not ever going to be about the platform specifically. It's going to be about how you leverage it. It's going to be about the consistency of posting. It's going to be about connecting with the community, being of value to the community, and then sharing something of value to everybody that we can support. Those key principles will never go away as far as no matter what platforms change.
Yeah. And would you recommend people for people to spend money on these platforms to grow their following or just do it all organically?
There's going to come a time where you have to spend money, right? Okay. There comes a time where if you want to scale to, 10,000 to 50,000 to 100,000, followers and or fans, you got to pay for ads to do that. I don't believe I've seen all these different stories. People talk about like Justin Bieber puts out a few videos and then he blows up or whatever. And what people don't understand is that these types of videos are very well orchestrated. Not only are they well orchestrated, the things that people don't know about Bieber, for example, he went knocking on doors at different radio stations before he just blew up. So it wasn't as easygoing as people make it sound. There's usually more to the story when it comes to building a brand. And so when you're talking about building a brand again, you want to be able to increase your reach and exposure. And from what I found, there is a time where you do need to start testing, ads and start building your platform, spending money. And if you have a way to make money, it's like, why not, right? You just want to make sure that you're either breaking even or mastering ads in a way to where you're not losing money as you run them. And that comes again with mastery of the platform. So right now, Facebook ads is huge, right? So you want to be able to study up on what are the most successful people who are doing Facebook ads, what are they doing and how are they doing it? And, study from those people and then implement those same principles.
Right. Yeah. And I like what you said about Justin Bieber, because so many people they're just expecting that one post to just blow up. And then their whole personal brand is just going to blow up, and they're going to become like millionaires within a year. But that never happens. And like you said, there's so much work behind the scenes. It's ridiculous. And people should realize that and notice that it's not going to take like a month or 2 months to just blow up your personal brand.
It could take years. I mean, the reality is it could take years. Richard Branson, 17 years. Eric Thomas, 20 years. Steve Harvey, 22 years, slept in his car for 3 years. So, wow. A lot of the people that we look up to, and I think Gary Vee, I forget how Gary Vee has said how many years he's been in the game. It's been a long time. And, his thing is basically, and I agree with that, while you're young, from your age to 22, put 10 years in mastering one thing. Right. So now you're in your early 30s. And so that, Gary Vee and a lot of these guys are in their 40s. Right. Kevin Hart is in his 40s. The Rock is in his 40s. So that by the time you're in your 40s, you've built up this significant brand. And that's, I think, when people focus on more patience and taking more time to build the foundation, they're set up for success versus a get rich quick scheme or some kind of, let me blow up real fast without sustaining it.
Yeah. But, like you said, it takes 10 years, but, in my opinion, it kind of be disheartening, because what if you go all in on Facebook and stuff like that, and then 5 years later, Facebook isn't even a thing, and then just there you are, with all that knowledge about Facebook, but then it's moved on, the world has moved on, and there's a new program out there and stuff like that. So, what would you say to those people that, they don't know what to dive into exactly for, those 10 years?
Yeah, so I tell, a lot of people have to understand, and I understand when it comes to me, I found my passion early, right? I found music at a very young age, which is not the norm. However, it's just like food. You don't know what kind of food you like until you travel the world and try a lot of different foods, right? That's going to open up your palate to all these different things that you like and don't like. So you won't know what you love until you have tasted a lot of different opportunities. And I say, go out and taste as many as possible. What you were saying, Will, I totally agree with. You don't want to focus on a platform and mastering that platform and associating your personal brand to that platform. You want to build a personal brand, whether you work for a company, whether you are mastering this one specific platform over here or whatever you're doing. But your personal brand never leaves you, right? You're never going anywhere. So from that perspective, you want to build your personal identity around, if it's Facebook, let's say, maybe you build it around mastery of ads attached to your personal brand, and then you continue to modify and evolve. All brands will evolve. So as they evolve, don't focus on, it's just, and I'll give you another one. I'll give you a different example so that we understand. You have a lot of athletes that have, you know, they go into something different. We talk about Kobe Bryant is a hot name right now because of, you know, his passing. Rest in peace to Kobe Bryant. But yeah. After Kobe Bryant couldn't play basketball anymore, what did he go into? He went into venture capital. He went into film, which was what he loved to do. So you should always have something else to transition, and it should never be about just that one sport or that one platform or that one thing. There should be other dimensions to your brand, and more than likely, like majority of us, there's a lot of things that we love, a lot of gifts that we have. So explore one of your other gifts. Don't just focus on just the only one thing, like you can't do anything outside of that, and build a brand that can be multidimensional versus one-sided.
Yeah, I agree with that. And, you know, like you said with Kobe Bryant and stuff, like he was at his peak and he was extremely popular and stuff when he played basketball. And then when he transitioned to like venture capitalism and stuff like that, like, you know, he was already at the top of one mountain. And then basically all you got to do is just jump to the top of another mountain. Because once you got your peak, like people know who you are. Like your personal brand is becoming well known to people all around you. So no matter what field you go into, like people would recognize your name and be willing to help you more. And then it'd be easier to grow. So I think it's important for people to just pick something right now, get really good at it, become popular and stuff so people know who you are, and get to like that peak of that mountain, and then just jump to the other peaks of different mountains. And then people will know who you are, and it'll be easier to transition into different phases of your life.
Absolutely. One thing that I would tell people, a skill that you should definitely have on your tool belt because of what we're doing right now, Will, which is talking, yeah. You should master public speaking. There, you know, 75% of the marketplace is afraid of public speaking. They would rather die than to go out in front of an audience and talk. So wow. By mastering that skill, you know, that you're going to be in the top 25% of the market. And I would tell people following that skill, something that we all do, whether we're talking to a girlfriend or a boyfriend or a date, and we're trying to, you know, just go to a movies, or maybe friends trying to sell each other on ideas, like, let's go to this restaurant, let's do this. Everybody's a salesperson. Everybody wants things to go in their favor. So if they're, you know, without a doubt, I would master public speaking, and then I would master the ability of selling, because those two things will never leave you.
Yeah, some things carry over to every field that you go into. And you're a pretty good public speaker, if I must say.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
You had a TEDx conference one time. And so I'm just curious, like, how can people become a better speaker? And like, how did you manage to land like a TEDx talk?
So there's organizations in the United States that are dedicated, and I'm sure throughout the world for that matter. There's an organization called Toastmasters, which is all about the development of speaking and bettering your speaking voice, how to deliver, you know, with credibility, how to have a dynamic voice, how to say less ums and filler words and things like that. So I would tell, you know, reach out to Toastmasters. Hands down, I think they're a global organization now, so I think you can find them throughout the world. But any organization that is all about the betterment of speaking, you know, you want to be around those types of organizations. As far as the TED Talk went specifically, I did the same thing that I'm telling everybody on this podcast to do, right? Which is A, get a mentor, make sure you have somebody that can help you. I had a mentor that was able to help me. Number two, testimonial stat. So before I was in the, before I gave the TEDx talk, I was actually featured in Huffington Post as a strategist watch. And I had some other accolades that I used to leverage to get the interest of the TED speaker. So then I sent them a 20-second reel and then, you know, the actual full speech. And what's funny, Will, is the speech that I sent them that they approved was not even the speech that I gave. They approved a totally different speech, but it's still that same foundational building. You want to continue getting credibility, leveraging your testimonials to get more testimonials. As you get those testimonials, you want to use those stories and leverage those stories to get PR. As you get PR, you want to leverage that PR and that authority to get, whether it's a TED Talk or whatever other thing you want. You want to always continue that process and that principle. So that was how I did it.
Man, that's pretty impressive. I know a lot of people, they've always wanted to do like TEDx talks and stuff like that, but they're hard to get, and they're definitely very hard to get. So it's impressive that you were able to get one and deliver it. And for people that want to become better speakers, like, how would you recommend that they start speaking? Like smaller groups, or just jump right into bigger groups and stuff like that? Or how would you recommend them to start?
Yeah, smaller groups for sure. You can always practice speaking by just going live, right? You can go on Facebook Live if you have LinkedIn Live available, or any other type of lives like Instagram Live, and just start talking. That's one way. You're more than likely not going to be very good, so you shouldn't expect to be good. I know that people online, every time you go online, you always are at the risk of a potential troll. So somebody could come on there and just try to hurt your feelings. So just know that that's a part of it. I would recommend going to someone like Toastmasters, where it's a small group of maybe 9 to 15 people. You're in a nurturing group where everybody there is trying to grow. And there's one person that's, you know, the most experienced, which is usually the person that's leading it. But you're in a group there that everybody knows you're not going to be as good. So you've got a lot more, you know, empathy and compassion and everybody there to support, like a support group. So that would be the way that I would recommend going about it.
Yeah, right. I just want to jump back to your story a little bit. So you were a college dropout, and now you have a very successful personal brand and business. So like, what happened in between there, and how did you learn those necessary skills to run and develop a business that is really successful in today's society?
For me, it was a lot of trial and error. So, you know, while I was working a lot of these corporate gigs, if you will, after I dropped out of college, I was still running my entertainment company on the side. So I had a company called All Around Entertainment, and we were putting on events for, you know, about 70 to 100 people on average. And I was doing a lot of different events, but I didn't know how to scale it. So it wasn't until 2014, 2015, when I really started reading a lot more books on entrepreneurship and really getting, you know, like an Audible account and all these different things and studying. And that's the one thing that I would say, if I could go back and do it all over again, I would have gotten mentors a lot earlier, and I would have started reading a lot earlier. A lot of things that I've done has just been, you know, wanting to do it, the desire to do it, going out and doing it, and not really knowing anything about what I'm doing. Other than when I was in corporate America, Will, like I would sit with top performers and I would sit with them and reverse engineer every single thing that they did to be successful. And that's how you want to go about building a personal brand or just life in general. You want to sit with the people who are the masters of that. You want to be able to study from them and start reverse engineering what they are doing, the principles of what they're doing that is making them successful. And by doing that, you're going to get ahead a lot faster, where for me, it's been a longer game because I've been doing a lot of trial and error. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. So basically what you're saying is follow people that are successful in doing what you want to do and just figure out how they basically got to where they are today.
Well, you can follow them by reading about their books. That's the reason why majority of people write books, right, is to put and pass on their knowledge. However, if you can get that one-on-one time, there's no better experience than getting that actual time with a mentor. And even though I'm successful now, I still have mentors, and I have a lot of different mentors for different things. So you want to be able to build that kind of relationship where you can sit down with a coach or a mentor or somebody that can guide you and give you more of that one-on-one development experience that you need for whatever it is that you're doing.
Yeah. And you said that you were self-taught basically, and you read a bunch of these books that helped to develop your soft skills and stuff like that, that helped you launch your business. So from your standpoint, like, what are like probably like your top 3 or 5 books that you would recommend for people to start reading if they want to become entrepreneurs?
So I would recommend The E-Myth by Michael Gerber, which really teaches you about the different perspectives within a business. There's 3 there. I don't want to spoil it, but go check that book out. It's phenomenal. For those of us that are, you know, haven't gone through that building of an MVP, and you're at that place where you need to get, you know, 10 to 100 to 250 to 500 to 1,000, like we talked about earlier, I would read Will It Fly by Pat Flynn. It's a great book on building the MVP and learning how to scale. Then my third book would be just my favorite book, which was a book that really got me going, was Awaken the Giant Within by Tony Robbins. Okay. Those would be the top 3 books I would get to start building that successful entrepreneur you want to be.
Awesome. I'm definitely going to have to check them out, because definitely. But so I want to run through a scenario here. And so if I find someone on Instagram that I love their content, I love what they're doing, I want to do this in the future, they got like 500,000 followers on Instagram and stuff like that, and I want them to be like my mentor and stuff. Like, how should I go about reaching out to them?
Well, number one, don't just look at somebody's followers and assume that they're a credible brand. A lot of people these days buy bots and things like that. So just because they got 500,000 followers doesn't necessarily mean that they're getting, you know, they should be getting about 50,000 likes on average, and they should be getting, you know, 5,000 comments. I mean, that's how you can tell if the brand has engagement, if it's a credible brand. So that's number one. Don't just get sold on the amount of likes and followers, and, you know, you make sure that they have engagement behind the brand. So let's say that you've done that research, you know that they are a massive, you know, brand. There's a lot of ways to get them to work with you. What I find is people remember things that are memorable, right? So you want to create a memorable experience for them to remember you. Now, some people go above and beyond and will send something directly to somebody's home, which is one way of going about it, which is like a soft bribe. Another way of going about it is trying to figure out what that person needs, and then being able to deliver on something they need without them knowing that you are about to help them, right? Because you always, you want to build that, again, something memorable, like, oh, okay, I remember Will. He's cool. He did, you know, XYZ for me. What do you need, right? So the law of reciprocation, that does work, where you can go and deliver something for on somebody's behalf. Another way of going about it is really just continuously offering value, and something as simple as going on all their blogs, posting on their blogs, posting on their comments, and just continually being a force to share what they're doing. And eventually they're going to start seeing that over and over again, like, who is this person, right? And once you've built up that rapport, then reach out. Say, man, hey, you know, I really like, you know, everything I've seen that you're doing. I really appreciate, you know, X, Y, and Z about what you're doing. I was wondering, do you have any space, you know, for a mentee, right? Like I would love for you to mentor me. Know that when you're asking someone of high caliber to mentor you, they're getting more than likely a lot of offers, right? So yeah. The way that you offset that, again, is doing something memorable on their behalf, or just paying for their time. And if they're a really good mentor, I mean, you should pay them, right? It's like they've invested, you know, 17 years or however many years of time in their own brand, then they can pass that on to you without you having to put in that time. So then the exchange is just a financial monetary exchange. So those would be the three ways that I would say to go about it. And that's what's worked for me.
Right. Awesome. Yeah. I'm definitely going to try to implement that. But the thing for me is, like, these people, they have big followers and stuff like that, and that might be bots, might not, but and they seem to have basically like everything going for them, like a successful business, stuff like that. So how can people like offer value?
Well, even though they have a big following, there's still ways to be valuable to anyone. And so sometimes you gotta search. It may not be on the surface. And I'll give you one for an example with Damon John from Shark Tank, right? Damon John was doing his book tour for Rise and Grind. And he was coming to Arizona when I was in Arizona, and I wanted to, again, be memorable. I wanted to make a moment with him. So I was listening to a lot of his podcasts, and he was talking about that his first child, he wasn't a really good father because he was putting so much time into FUBU. And so he said with his, I think it was his third child, he was looking into a lot of daddy jokes, and he became this kind of silly, goofy, like daddy joke father. Now, a lot of people might have heard that and not pay no attention to that. I heard that and was like, oh, when I meet him, I'm going to deliver a silly dad joke. And that's what I did. So wow. And while everybody else is trying to get an autograph and get a photo with him, I showed up with something as simple as a Starbucks coffee and a goofy dad joke. Now, would he remember it 5 years from now? Maybe, maybe not. But from the standpoint of out of that 30 people that was there or so, and I'm talking about the early beginnings, that was memorable because nobody else came with a dad joke. So you might have to search and sift to figure out the ways in which that you can be valuable, right? But it's there. If you do the research and you sift for it, they share it. It might be a hidden nugget. The last thing that I'll say too, and another way that it just came to me that always works as well, is you can always go through a friend of a friend. So if you get validated by one of their friends that you're somebody to be of value, then by basically getting a referral to connect with them. That's another way of going about it. But you may have to search, Will. I mean, it sounds like that's going to be, you know, the number one is really figuring out what they need and how you can be of value. But don't think just because they have a big brand that you can't be valuable. They're still human, and even the smallest things can be memorable. So just take that and run with it.
Yeah, that's honestly, that's a really funny story. Thank you for sharing that. I really appreciate it. That was funny. So before we run out of time, is there anything else you would like to say? Like, what's your Instagram and stuff so people can reach out to you?
Yeah, I got two things. So first thing, I'm one of those guys that's always down to connect. So you can connect with me either through the website at CAUVEE.com or on pretty much every platform. Only one that I'm not as active on is Snapchat and TikTok. So, but I'm still there, but wherever you guys spend the most time, please reach out and connect, say, what's up. Let me know that you heard, you know, this episode, ask questions and let's build. And then the last thing I'll say is, give it time. The single is out. It's out now in 200 plus stores worldwide. So definitely go check out, Give It Time, and just put in Cave, Give It Time, and you'll find it. And let me know what you think about the new song.
Awesome. I really appreciate you coming on and spreading your wisdom with all of my listeners and with me. So I really appreciate it. And guys, Cave, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thank you. You guys take care.
No way that we go is a one-way street. Nothing that we love is a one-day key. And if we gonna do it, we gonna do this now. And if we say we gonna hold this now.